Hello and welcome to another edition of the Guardians of the Holy Grail, a program dedicated to diving deep to uncover and expose the truth behind the ancient Holy Grail mysteries. Hello, my name is Mark Montepinco, and I'll be your host for this show. The Guardians of the Holy Grail show exists to clear up many of the popular misconceptions regarding the Holy Grail mysteries, the Knights Templar, the Freemasons, and other secret societies. I'm hoping to set the record straight with hard facts from authors and researchers, as well as with testimonials from current and past members of the Knights Templar, Freemasonry, and other secret societies. I myself am a Knight Templar of the International Order of Gnostic Templars, which was founded to revive the mystical rites and wisdom of the original Knights Templar that over the centuries have either been lost or ignored. Within our Gnostic Knight Templar organization, we practice both alchemy and gnosis, and we dedicate ourselves to discovering the truth behind the mysteries of the Knights Templar, the Holy Grail, and the secret societies. You can learn more about us, and you can even become one of us if you like. Why don't you visit our website at www.gnostictemplars.org, learn all about us, and find out how you can sign up for our monthly e-news to keep abreast with exactly what we're up to. One thing that we're up to is, and I'm going to give an update on it now, is a conference that will be happening next April 17th in Italy. It's called the Congress to Unite the Initiatic Societies. It'll be the first Congress of its kind that's existed since 1785. It'll be the first of its kind where you've actually got delegates from all different secret societies that are coming together right now. Why are we doing this? Well, we're doing it so that we can come together. We believe that our origins are the same or similar of all secret societies, that we all started as guardians of the Gnostic alchemical path and tradition. And we've kind of moved away from each other, separated, and some of us have even lost our way. And so we're having this conference to kind of bring us all back together again, to talk about our common roots, our common heritage, what we're all about, and to create a alliance, which we're calling the World Alliance for Planetary Enlightenment, where we can all work together, network together, in order to now take this Gnostic alchemical wisdom, take it out into the world where it's really needed. And I heard from our co-sponsor today, actually, Paolo Corallini, who is the Grand Chancellor of OSMTH in Italy, that we finally have nailed down a location for the conference. It'll be the Philharmonic Drama Society in Macerata, Italy, which is right near Osima, which we had thought we were going to have it, but it's right next door to it. Macerata and Osima both have a very deep connection to the Knights Templar, a lot of history there. And in the center of Macerata is actually a Templar church, and in Osima, underneath Osima, is this incredible network of tunnels where the Knights Templars used to have a lot of meetings and perform some of their rites. So who do we have speaking? Well, we have myself and our International Grand Prior Ian Sinclair. We have author Christopher Knight. And we've got commitments for at least three Grand Masters, Grand Priors of different initiatic societies of Europe that have committed to speak at the conference. And I'm sure we're going to have a lot more by the time we're done. And, of course, we'll also have Paolo Corallini. So it's going to be an amazing event, first of its kind in the last couple hundred years. If you want to stay abreast with that event, keep visiting our website. There'll be updates. And get on our mailing list. There'll be updates through the mailing list. Now, today, during our show, if you have any questions for our guest, feel free to give us a call on our toll-free number, which is 888-815-9756. Today, we're going to be talking about a very popular subject. That's Roslyn Chapel. Most of you are familiar with Roslyn and know that it was built by Clan Sinclair during the 15th century and now is considered to be a monument to the Knights Templars and Freemasons It's one of their pilgrimage places where they go and often do rites and study the chapel. A lot of their mysteries are encoded on the in the figures that line the inside and outside walls of Roslyn Chapel. And there's a lot of treasures there. Supposedly there's a lot that are hidden in the crypt of Roslyn Chapel. Anything from the cup of Christ or the Ark of the Covenant have been suggested as possibly being hidden there in that crypt. We in our organization think that there might be some documents that relate to the Johannite Gnostic tradition that the Templars were initiated into after they arrived in the Holy Land. And we believe that some of those documents actually might talk about John the Baptist as being the Messiah or co-Messiah with Jesus, as well as there could be documents about the bloodline of Jesus and Mary Magdalene, and possibly even documents that talk about the true successor of Jesus being John the Apostle and Mary Magdalene rather than St. Peter. So it's kind of a powder keg what we've got going there. And there could be some amazing discoveries that could occur if we could get into the crypt. Well, today we're going to talk about one person that's been there. He's Andrew Sinclair, one of the leading members of Clan Sinclair. For many years, Andrew has been involved in extensive research of Roslyn Chapel, and many of his findings have been published in books I'm sure you've all read, like The Sword and the Grail, The Secret Scroll, and Roslyn, the story of Roslyn Chapel, and the true story behind the Da Vinci Code. Andrew, he's really, as far as I know, is the only person that's actually been down there in modern times. And he's going to be talking to us about some new discoveries that were recently made around Roslyn. So, greetings, Andrew. Welcome to the Guardians of the Holy Grail.
Well, I'd like to hear from you.
Well, you started to tell me a little bit about your new discoveries, and I'm on pins and needles now. I want to hear as much as I can about the new discoveries around Roslyn.
Well, as always, the Greeks have a name for it, and everything dates back. They developed the theories of sacred geometry and architecture and cosmic harmony. Now, some of their historians, Herodotus, said that these discoveries came from ancient Egypt, and they would be passed on, as we know, through Roman and Arabic cultures, really on to Freemasonry, as we know it. Now, sacred geometry, we'll come to Roslyn soon, is the quest to chart the universe, as well design a building by measurements and numbers, the compasses and square of the Freemasons. And cosmic harmony was the effort of the medieval faith maps. These are wonderful things to study because they see the whole world and its geography in terms of faith. And all the astronomers up to Isaac Newton, he was also an alchemist, actually. You've got to find an order in the heavens, as well as discover the notes of the music of the spheres. Now, that's a really interesting thing, which has happened lately. It happened at Stirling Castle, and they went in, and they went to the king's bedchamber there, and they looked at the roundels all over the bedchamber. And my goodness, it was sort of early binary system. And you could actually, I'm not a musician really, but in 9 separate phrases repeated 3 times. And from this, any musician, improvising a bit, could do a perfect bit of Renaissance music. Now, years ago, I went to Roslyn Chapel, and I had a look at the 4 arched cubes. They're just behind the altar, below the roof. And they are supported in arcs of stone ribs, leading to a central boss. And these are exactly the old principles in architecture of the sacred harmony of the cosmos. And on each curve, you've got 9 musical notes again, protruding, but mainly in the carvings of stars and lozenges, rather like modern clefs and keys and tones. And around them on the back wall, angels play various musical instruments. And looking up, a dancer or musician could know how to step out or play the pipes. That's quite interesting, isn't it? Mark?
Yes, fascinating. Fascinating. Keep going.
Can I go on?
Yes, please.
I mean, I'm sorry it's a bit of a rant, but you know, I'm just trying to say this is probably the most important discovery in Roslyn Chapel for a long time. And I presume to say that the stars and lozenges within these sacred octagons of Roslyn are an early form of musical notation. Now, while the ones of Stirling Castles are a sort of binary code of Roman numerals, the Roslyn ones are based on a sound system called cymatics. Sorry to give you a word like that, but from the Greek word cyma, anything swollen, a wave. In architecture, and that's what we've got there, it's a moulding of a cornice, outline of which consists of a concave and a convex line. It's like a symbol. They have concave plates struck together. They produce a ringing sound. That's where the word comes from, the Greek for wave. Now, recently, in a sort of groundbreaking solution to a problem, a man called Tom Mitchell believes that these signs were the music to the lost and sacred hymn to John the Baptist, so revered by the Knights Templar. Well, I'm not so sure, though I'm not a musician, as I say, and I think all the people listening to this should really study this problem if they're musicians. It's because of a remarkable book by a man called Craig Wright, who is the professor of the history of music at Yale. The book's called The Maze and the Warrior, Symbols in Architecture, Theology, and Music. He said that an earlier man, you know, than the 16th century, we're talking about the 15th century, Guillaume de Marchal wrote The Mass of the Armed Man, which was performed in Scotland before the Reformation, at the time actually Roslyn Chapel was built. What's incredible about that it was a dance at the cathedrals of Auxerre and Sens. Hundreds of the clergy performed a sort of ring dance on a tiled maze pattern, and they sang the existing anthems of praise to the Easter victim, and these the new lambs. We have the notations of these music, and we can read them now. I mean, we can actually play them. And that maze still exists on the floor of the cathedral at Chartres. You can go there, see it. And that dance was performed to one of the 35 existent variations of this mass, named as the Armed Man, a sort of Catholic version of Onward Christian Soldiers at the time of the last of the Crusades.
Yeah.
Now, this is something I did discover. The flagstones, if you go to Roslyn Chapel, the flagstones are rather modern. They're put in the 18th century when the Erskines took over and the chapel was falling down. But as at the neighbouring Melrose and New Battle Cistercian abbeys, and you know very well the Templars were the armed fist of the Cistercian white monks, they had decorated tile floors, and you can still see them. And they were actually installed at the time of the rebuilding of Roslyn Chapel by Earl William Sinclair, and he was a very literate man. He used many foreign masons who'd worked in those other monastic buildings, designed by the master French mason John Moreau, who worked on 6 of these buildings. And Earl William was actually a Knight of the Golden Fleece, and he would have known of the favorite sung mass of the time, the Armed Man, which was developed and danced in Burgundy upon a tiled labyrinth. So what my theory is, I'm pretty certain that those musical notations in the back vaults behind the altar of Roslyn were the end of a maze dance. They are in an octagon under three of the spoked roof vaultings. Now, I think that the old floor of Roslyn Chapel had a labyrinth or maze like Chartres. And I think, as this was the most common thing of the time, that at the end of the maze dance in the main floor of the hall, they went to these three vaulted octagonal chapels at the end. And you see them, they've got crossed ribs. What they seem to be are like the crossed swords of the old Scottish dancers who danced between the crossed swords under these crossed ribs. I think they were brought over this dance by the Moors or Moorish dancers, which actually, they came to Scotland, they were the armourers, and they went to Roslyn. You see, I think it's the most extraordinary coincidence. I suspect that of the many things which Roslyn is, it is actually not only a chapel of the Grail, it is a chapel of the Grail, a symbolic one, which is the quest for God, but it's also, I think, a chapel of sacred harmony. And what I think happened, I mean, on the walls, for instance, as you know, they have many little temples of Solomon, so it's obviously a rebuilding of the temple. But it's also in proportion something very important. You see, it's two joined cubes. Do you know that, Mark?
Mm-hmm.
With a vaulted ceiling, with stars, and Jesus Christ among them, blessing us, and angels, and music. I think it's what Plato wanted, you know. He said, and indeed Alberti and Palladio, they thought that music, sacred harmony, music of the spheres, actually designed a sacred building. And what you heard, and the harmonies of music, would influence the way you actually built a chapel.
I can believe that. I've actually heard also, Andrew, that it's a certain chord or a certain frequency or a certain sequence of frequencies or notes that will activate a given temple or pyramid as well.
Well, they're like if you go there and you stand beneath these three vaults, vaulted ceilings with their ribs and spokes behind the altar, it's very like sound baffles I see if I go to a concert hall. I think they reflect sound, and indeed, like, as I said, the symbols, which are the same design, you can, if one was to dance or sing there, you'd probably get a ringing note.
Mm-hmm. Well, that would be fascinating. Go ahead.
I think if we think of these terms, the ancient Greek ones and the Egyptian ones too, Plato said music, of course, influenced character, influenced design. And that's what the Renaissance architects do, and I think Earl William did too. I think he wanted to make a great sacred harmony of this. And the what is incredible, and I'm not going to take this too far because I get into Dan Brown territory, but if you look at those designs, in Stirling Castle, and this has been authenticated by a professor of music in Edinburgh, these are all done in Roman numerals, oddly enough, but they're binary. Oddly enough, that was the Freemasons' secret code, was binary. It tends to be dots and strokes one and naught, and these are done in Roman numerals, tending to be one and naught, although they didn't invent the zero. What's interesting about the Roslin one, I've got the Templar code in front of me. They tend to be done in stars and lozenges and V's on their side. They look to me, although I'm very silly about these things, very like modern clefs and keys and tones. And they are in nines, as of Sterling, and they are certainly in rows. If that's true, we will have rediscovered Templar music. But if it's not true, it's only an idea. But I'm certain of one thing, that Earl William designed Roslin Chapel on the principles of sacred harmony.
Well, you say rediscovering Templar music. Do you think the Templars were trying to create music that would have an alchemical effect or generate an alchemical energy like they
Well, absolutely. I mean, alchemy was the cutting science of the age. And they all had these codes. I mean, actually, I've got four opposite me, you know, the Illuminati, the Freemasons, the Rosicrucians, and the Templars. But these codes are interesting because they all resemble, basically, you see, the original Greeks, who wrote out the original melodies we have, did it in the Greek alphabet and in numbers. And all these codes are alphabet and numbers. The questions are merely, what signs do you use in numbers or the alphabet? Roman, in Greece actually, all the alphabet was a number. And so that was quite easy. In Rome you had numbers and the Latin alphabet. And then in all these codes I have in front of me, everyone is translatable into numbers or an alphabet. And you tend to arrange them. If you arrange them in threes, as at Stirling Castle, you get something very similar to modern music. And in nines, so of course the great thing they used, the Greeks had three octaves in the Dorian mode, and then Gregorian chants have one octave. And the octave was a great thing, but the other thing was the nine, and that's what they used. When arranged in rows, it's extremely like modern music.
Well, do you think, Andrew, that that all the Gothic cathedrals and Gothic churches like Roslin Chapel were made so that they could be activated? They were sound activated enclosures, and do you think that if we come up with the right sequence of notes or sounds, that we can activate Roslin to a much greater level than it is today?
Oh, I'm certain, as long as we can get rid of all the tourists like ourselves. But no, of course, we know that. We've got Sens, we've got Auxerre, we've got Chartres. We've got these cathedrals with mazes in them and a sacred dance. We know that. This is 15th century when Roslin was built, so I see no reason at all William, who was a Knight of the Golden Fleece, went to Burgundy where all these dances were done on the mazes and labyrinths. I mean, there's no reason he wouldn't have done the same thing at Roslin Chapel. Probably Roslin, I'm sorry to say this, it's been dreadfully spoilt. You know, when I first got there and discovered the first Grail stone of Earl William, that's in the Sword and the Grail, it was empty. A mould all over the roof. There was no one in it. And so you could wander around, and I can't say you could hear music, but let us say there was a resonance and some feeling of space. The problem with ancient monuments is you've got to go alone. You've got to be there alone. You've got to feel the place. You've got to sing to it. And you can't do that now. See, that's the problem. You lose these things by too many people there. It is a problem.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's the way it is with all great monuments around the planet right now. They'll never be fully activated again as long as they're swarming with tourists all the time, and no one can perform any rituals in them anymore.
Well, you can. I became a member, indeed, Grand Knight's Cross or something. You know, at Roslyn Pillar, yes, you can perform rituals there, and I'm a Gnostic Templar. But the point is, it's rare. It has to be booked. But I would say that the greatest privilege you could get in life as a member of our movement is to go into Roslyn Chapel alone and go back on that altar and look at the stars and the ceiling and all that and really contemplate for about half an hour in the dark or little light. I mean, I think that's the way you get a feeling of place and time.
Well, I know that Niven Sinclair had a feng shui master visit the chapel at some point. He was saying that the eastern wall needed to be taken down at some point because that was blocking some of the energy that would have come into Roslyn Chapel. What else do you think needs to be done before we can completely reactivate the energy of Roslyn?
Well, you see, originally it was going to be a huge basilica. The two cubes which form it were going to have four other cubes in the shape of a giant cross lying upon the earth. So it was only ever begun and never completed. And that shape, the huge cross and all, is its energy. I don't think that the eastern wall needs to come down or anything like that. It is incomplete. And I think all our journeys, quests for the Grail and everything, and that is one of the great chapels of the Grail, are personal. I think the sense lies in ourselves, and we must go there, hopefully to contemplate and feel what energy enters into us. I have had people tell me, who have been there alone, that they feel this energy. But I don't think it's deflected by a facade, a wall, or something not being complete. I think it's complete within itself. I think it was built as, sort of, as the Greeks said, Isaac Newton invented gravity, space, and a sort of creator of the universe. But he also thought that buildings, as Christopher Wren did, who built St. Paul's here, he thought that buildings should somehow reflect cosmic harmony and the cosmic universe. And I think William got very nearly there in the two cubes he built. These were, of course, rebuildings as cubes with vaulted ceilings of the Temple of Solomon, which is there everywhere, and of the Holy of Holies containing the Ark. I mean, they were all done with sacred geometry, and also, as I now suggest, with sacred music.
Well, why don't we take a short break now, and we can come back and talk some more about Roslyn and the mysteries around Roslyn. Don't go away. We'll be back in a couple minutes and talk more with Andrew Sinclair about Roslyn Chapel.
Lovely.
In our Constitution, the Founding Fathers laid a path to an economy that should have kept Americans free and prosperous. How we the people were tricked off that path into a world of debt and deception reads like one of the great mystery novels of all time. American Free Press compares author Ellen Brown's new book, Web of Debt, to an eye-opening thriller that will leave you feeling like Neo in The Matrix. In Web of Debt, the mysterious and often shocking origins of today's ultimate financial crisis are exposed, starting with its distant beginnings to its present disastrous climax, as the reader is shown that the way to restore America's true wealth has been with us all along. Please visit Alan Brown's website, webofdebt.com, to see how America's money and future can become by and for the people once again.
If your body isn't feeling too well these days, you're gonna start taking this hemp, I say. Go to hempusa.org. You may not like what I'm about to say, but you know I'm gonna say it anyway. The government doesn't want the best for you. They keep you down, they keep you blue. They starve your body for all its nutrients. They won't let you grow industrial hemp. It really doesn't make any kind of sense when it's so healthy for the world and useful for you, my friends. I hope Mr. Bush will hear this song, for the heart of America wants this one. Go to hempusa.org. If you're a truther, an anarchist, or renegade, you only want things that God has made, go to hempusa.org. We offer free shipping anywhere in the States. Go to hempusa.org.
Tarzan Love, Tarzan Love, BBS Radio. Tarzan Love, BBS. Tarzan Love, Tarzan Love, BBS Radio. Tarzan Love, BBS. Tarzan Love, Tarzan Love, BBS.
Hey, we're back again with Andrew Sinclair talking about Roslyn Chapel. If you would like to know more about us, the International Order of Gnostic Templars, please visit our website at www.gnostictemplars.org, and you can sign up for our monthly e-news. You can sign up to become an associate member. You can even download an application to become a full member. And we have lots of information, books and videos to watch and all kinds of good stuff. So please come by and visit. So, Andrew, I have a question for you. What do you think was the main reason that William Sinclair even built Roslyn Chapel? Was it to be an initiation chamber? Was it to be a relic curie for, you know, artifacts and Templar treasure and documents? What do you feel about that?
Well, he was one of the most learned people on the age, somebody we now call an Illuminati or something. Anyway, he was certainly Gnostic, because one of the interesting things he'd obviously read about, he was a descendant of the Templars, the Sinclairs all were, but he'd read and or heard the great Parzival of Wolfram von Eschenbach, where the Templars are the guardians of the Grail. It's pretty certain that he built a chapel of the Grail of his own. And that was Roslyn. But he also had the best library in Scotland at the time. There were at least 300 volumes all written out on vellum and everything else, of which about 20 survived, because the awful Reformation burnt them all and got rid of them. There were about 10 in the Bodleian and 10 in Edinburgh left. And these are the earliest works of Scots literature. And they are very Gnostic. And, you know, even his grandfather, there's one thing left from the great Earl Henry, the Earl of Orkney and all. He was the last three Earls of Orkney. I mean, these are very strange texts with very strange illustrations. They're hard to decipher, some of them. They deal with warfare, but they deal with religion and all, but in a very strange way. And he was certainly creating some form of, I think, Gnostic as an heir of the Templars, you know, shrine of worship and a chapel of the Grail. I'm pretty convinced about that. And I think that was his motive. You can't explain a sort of pagan element to all the green men and the plants and all that. That dates from his Viking past. But he was also creating a lot of wonders, and certainly the building of the temple. There's Zerubbabel there, who built the second temple, and what he said to King Darius and all that. A lot of Templar symbols, an angel with a Templar knight on a horse, St. John the Baptist, the veil of St. Veronica, the Lamb of God and all that. I mean, he was, I think, really at the cutting edge of late medieval civilization, where it gets into alchemy.
Well, the times that I've been there, Andrew, I've searched the images on the wall, trying to find one that I associate with alchemy and gnosis. Can you tell me any of those, what you consider to be the images that are in Roslyn today that are associated with alchemy or gnosis?
Well, there's the one they call Baphomet. It's just the horned Moses. The great alchemic symbol is the crucible or the cup. You see, what we don't know about Roslyn is that there were six altars, not one. When the awful Reformation came along, as the St. Clares were Catholic, they had to take them all down except one. Awful lot has been destroyed. But what remains is there are symbols. Well, the great one is, of course, on the ceiling in the right-hand corner. That is the cup and the grail. On the right-hand corner, you will find a crescent moon pouring out the cornucopia on earth. It's in the most important point on the chapel roof, the eastern right-hand corner. And that is the grail. And that is the crucible. That is alchemy. It's right on the roof. And above it is flying down a dove with a wafer in its beak. But right on the right-hand eastern corner, you will find the cup, the crucible, the crater, the grail, as a sort of crescent moon shape pouring out bounty on earth.
Well, would you say that they originally there was kind of Gnostic, alchemical initiations and ceremonies that took place within the chapel?
Oh, I'm certain there were, and particularly when although it was completed by his son, but if it had that, as I suspect, maize floor, ritual dancing and all that, yes. You see, the problem with the whole of Scottish history is the Reformation. Comes along, just destroys all these things, except for Roslyn Chapel, but that's probably, as we know, because it was linked with the Freemasons. But everything else is destroyed, and it's no good. There are no records. There's nothing. We have one record from Father Hay. He doesn't talk about dancing in the chapel. He merely talks about how it was constructed with all the best masons from Europe. So if we are working out what actually happened there in terms of initiation ceremonies and all that, we don't know. But as I'm saying, at the time, and he was a Knight of the Golden Fleece, William, pretty likely he was doing the Mass of the Armed Man. He was a Catholic. And dancing. Initiation ceremonies, we don't know. But it's an oddity. For instance, the only great piece of Masonic music we have is Mozart's The Magic Flute. And in it, Papageno, it all takes place in Egypt, somewhat in a garden. And it was originally to be, and he initiates people into the rites of Isis. And it was originally going to be called the Egyptian Mysteries. So we don't know, but the interesting thing in that is, of course, the Moorish pillar, the apprentice pillar, which seems to show, let's say, a Near Eastern influence.
Well, you, as I mentioned earlier, you were actually able to get down in the crypt at one point. How exactly did you go about getting permission to do that, and do you think it's possible to get permission to do it again?
Never. No, that was Niven Sinclair, who actually had, he was broke at the time from the Earl of Roslyn. He was absolutely broke, so Niven had the use of the chapel for 10,000 a year for 3 years. So we were loosed upon it, with Niven's picturing to find the Grail in the basement. We had two nights there without being disturbed. After that, everything fell upon us. I did get down to the level of the lower church, the Collegiate Church of St. Bartholomew, and I tried to get in sideways, but time was short, and it won't be done again, because you'll have the whole weight of Heritage Scotland, 45 professors, everything, if they ever do it again. But there's no reason not to do it, because it's actually built at 14 pillars on the previous pillars, which are in rock below of the crypt. So it's totally solid. The flagstones, as I say, took over from the old tiles in the 18th century. There's nothing in them. And some of them even have a sort of old central heating system beneath it. There's simply no reason not to excavate it. But now people are so interested in Roslyn, and it's become, alas, somewhat to do with me, a sort of totem of Scotland. It's going to be absolute murder to try to get 20 squabbling bodies together. I mean, we were rather pirates in those days. These were simpler days. And we had it for 2 nights and 2 days and did the best we could. But that was entirely at times which are totally changed. I mean, they've got a grant of a couple of million, 2.5 million to put on a new roof and redo things. I don't think very well, but there you are. And any excavation, it's been mooted by lots of people. Somebody blocks it, somebody does this, somebody does that. Probably want to write a book or something.
Well, if there's, of course, I'm sure half the world would just give anything to be able to get into Roslyn Chapel. Maybe if we kind of started a movement of sorts, and I thought Christopher Knight was trying to do this at one point, because create a movement to convince the powers that be that, you know, we should get down there, we should be able to get down there. Maybe one thing could lead to another, and we might be able to do it.
Yes, I think, but you'll have to get the permission of the Earl of Roslyn, who I met, and he's a top policeman, actually, here. So, and you've also got to get the permission of Heritage Scotland. Now, it's actually a private chapel. It's a Church of Scotland chapel. It's not Presbyterian. It actually belongs to the Earl of Roslyn. So it's really up to Peter Roslyn to make the move. But it, as he's taken so much public money from Scottish Heritage, they'd have to be in it. Entirely up to him and Scottish Heritage. Because he's got nearly 2 million from them to redo up the chapel. It's had this iron roof over it and everything else. So it's been practically unseeable for the last 3 or 4 years. But when that's all over, I think there's a chance that they might permit an excavation. Certainly, all of us want it.
So when the time's right, then
I'll go for it at any time.
Yeah, I can call upon you to help with the movement.
You certainly can, any time, any place, anywhere.
Good, you'll be hearing from me then. Well, I heard that there was a movement for the Sinclairs to take back Roslyn Chapel. Have you heard any more about that?
Oh, no, that's never really come off. What interests me as much is, you know, the greatest Masonic document of all, in the secret scroll, the Kirkwall scroll, which is the greatest Masonic scroll in the north of Europe. and the proof that the Templars became the Masons. That's my big fight, really. But it needs, I'm trying to get through John Thursday, the number two to the other case, Nessus Influence. I'm trying to get 100,000 for them to preserve the scroll, which is rotting away in a lodge in Kirkwall.
Right,
we fight these fights, you know. I hope they join you in yours.
Well, I'll help you in your fight if you help me in mine, okay.
Certainly will. The mass of the armed man.
Well, I'm sure what people are wanting to know right now is, you know, when you went down into the crypt, Andrew, what exactly did you find down there?
I found three coffins, a skeleton or two, a few bones, and that was it. And then this blocking wall. We'd done a ground scan, and I should have been able to get through into the main crypt. But after the Battle of Dunbar, when the last of the Sinclair Knights was buried under there, they put up this blocking wall. And, you know, it's really sealed off. It's 6 foot thick. And when we put down a spectrometer to try to, through a hole, to try to see what was below, rubble filled it. I'm sure the 20 Sinclair Knights down there, and very possibly Templar records and treasures. But as they were the guardians, there's no question about it, for the Catholic royal family, they were Catholics, for Mary Queen of Scots and Mary of Guise, they did hide all the sacred Catholic treasures in that vault. That we know. And nobody's been there since. They could even find the Holy Rood down there. But nobody's seen it since. The last person who was in there was in the 18th century. And he's a bit untrustworthy, the Sinclair historian, Father Hay. And he claims to have opened one of the lead coffins the knights were lying in. And the knight totally dissolved in front of his eyes. But that's the last claim, 18th century. But that's it. And I think it's going to be incredibly difficult, though, I'll join in the campaign, to get those flagstones open. There are so many ambitious people who want to do it and discover the treasures. It's one of the great lost quests, like, you know, the quest for the Ark of the Covenant.
Well, if you went down today, Where would you enter the crypt now? I understand that...
Well, exactly where I did. I mean, there are two ways to open it. The best way in would be straight under the central boss through the flagstones, bang, down. That's the center, and that would go straight into the crypt, though I suspect it's rather full of rubble. Other way is the way I went in at the side. There's a side, steps down. But you've got a six-foot wall to go through, but then you'd get into the crypt. Might be the best way.
Well, right underneath the keystone, I understand, isn't there the biggest vault is kind of in that area, and is there a...
Well, you see, it was built on an old collegiate church. The crypt is the crypt of the old collegiate church, which is now, and the, you go down to it, and then the present church chapel is built on top of the previous one. So we know exactly where it is, we know where it is, and the foundations are the foundations of the present chapel. And this collegiate church was put up in the 12th century, and the crypt is still there. But it's all been blocked off.
Well, the ground scans have actually revealed that there is, eight different...
Oh, it reveals exactly what goes up. It reveals there are vaults below, there are pillars below, and there's another vault back of the present altar. And all these things are revealed by the ground scan. Where, what is wrong is, they said there wasn't this blocking wall, so I couldn't get in sideways.
Well, so that seems like a pretty big order to take down that 6 foot, what is it, that thick wall that you ran up against.
Well, you couldn't do it in 2 days and nights. I think the village of Roslyn thought we were doing satanic exercises inside there or something.
Well, wouldn't it disturb the foundations of the chapel to...
It's very strong, actually, because it is built on a rock. And the foundations are very secure. It's not going to fall in. The most interesting thing about it, really, in construction, is it's got the largest stone roof of any chapel in Europe. So the foundations are very strong, that vaulted roof above. But it was a beautiful piece of architecture. As I say, sacred and harmonious architecture. Beautiful piece of architecture. As for decorations, well, we're still trying to work them out, aren't we?
Well, of those things that you discovered when you went down there, I guess you found some skulls and maybe...
Three coffins and a few bones.
Well, did you...
a wooden bowl, a medieval wooden bowl. That was all, which the workmen had used then. That was all.
Did you take them out, or did you replace them?
I took out the bowl, which I said was symbolic of the Grail, the wooden bowl. It's at the Museum of Roslyn now, yeah.
Hmm.
I didn't take out anything else. I didn't disturb remains.
So you didn't find any skulls down there?
No, a few bones, three coffins, and the iron bits at the ends of coffins, that was all.
Well, I heard that the hole underneath Roslyn is backfilled with sand. So did you have to fight up against a lot of sand to get down there?
No. It wasn't sand. It was very hard packed. I can't remember. Yes, it was hard packed earth.
Mm.
But that's what it was. There was only a side vault, as I say. I didn't get into the main vault. It was a side vault, which was still operative. I think it was put in later. And to put in these late 18th century coffins, it was probably the one Father Hay saw. Because you couldn't get into the main vault by that time.
Well, did you see anything when you stuck that little periscope down into the crypt? Did you see anything through that?
Well, there were two possible ways. I know Niven later tried to drill in from the east end of the chapel, but that was rather a disaster. But still, there we are. It was not permitted, and it all went extremely wrong. Niven was always thinking that there was a treasure down there. That was his interest. Mine was more history, really. I wanted to discover those 20 knights which Walter Scott sang about, and perhaps those Templar records. You see, the reason we think there may be something there is that the headquarters of the Templars is only 6 miles from Roslyn Templar. It's called Templar Ballantrodac. It's only 6 miles away, and they were very closely concerned, we know, from that Templar headstone I found of William de Sinclair, who went out to Spain to bury Robert the Bruce's heart. We know that these were terribly close. We also know that they were the protector of the royal secrets. And we know when the Templars went, they would have left their treasures and records with the Sinclairs at Roslyn. And, well, we know because the Sinclair was still a Templar 14 years after they were disbanded. But, and we also know they were certainly the keepers of the royal treasures whenever the English attacked Edinburgh and Holyrood, the Sinclairs put them in the vaults of Roslyn. So it's very likely there's stuff down there. And if they're grails, material grails, which I don't believe in, because there are quite a lot of them, but I think it's a symbolic quest for God, but if there are, they would be the containers from Constantinople of the Holy Veil and the Holy Shroud, because we certainly know the Templars got hold of them when, in the Fourth Crusade, they took Constantinople.
Well, my hope is that they'll also find the head of John the Baptist, of course, as a Johannite.
Yes, I agree with you, but I must point out, having done some research on relics, there are 13 authenticated heads of John the Baptist across Europe. So whether it's a real one, you see, I think that famous head of Harum of Beef, or whatever it's called, on the wall is the head of John the Baptist. I think that is it. It's the stone one, the famous one with a mark across the temple.
That's the one in Arnhem.
I think that is the head of John the Baptist. I think it is Johannite. But the actual skull, there were so many heads of John the Baptist. I agree with you. I think the whole thing of the worship of the skull and Baphomet was the worship of John the Baptist's head. I totally agree with you about that. I think it's on the wall. That's why it has a mark across its forehead.
Well, I planted myself in front of the skull at Amiens for about 3 hours, and I was hoping that I was going to feel some of the energy that the Templars referred to during their trials in France, that it had this incredible energy emanating out of it, and I felt nothing. And so because of that, I went away feeling, well, I don't really think that this is the one. Yeah. And that's only the only one that I've actually been in the presence of all the different heads that circulating around Europe over the years. But that one that a lot of people think is the actual head, I don't know. I didn't notice any special energy coming from it. So
there are, as I've told you, so many fake heads of John the Baptist, because the great way of getting tourists and pilgrims to pay for the monasteries was to have all these relics. And John the Baptist's head was a top relic, but not entirely authentic. So I can't answer for your one.
Right. Well, Andrew, you recently published a book on the Holy Grail, which is, I guess, kind of the definitive book now.
The Legends of the Grail,
so
yes.
Territory in that book. And can you tell me what the name of it is?
Yes, it's The Legends of the Grail. You can get it through Amazon, you know, and all that. Yes, The Legends of the Grail. I don't think they're all legends. I think they're all beliefs, but the publisher wanted to call it that. But, you know, I haven't, as I say, I think I've finished my Grail studies, but one never does. I think I'm through with Ross Lynn, that something else turns up. I'm really fascinated at the moment on these Templar codes and music and, you know, building the Templar chapel in sort of cosmic harmony, the harmony of the world, the universe, as well as the Temple of Solomon.
Well, I'd like to get you on in the future and hear about your updates on this research. It's obviously very fascinating, and I'm sure that everyone would like to hear how it's coming along. So thank you so much for being on the show today, Andrew, and I look forward to having you come on in the future sometime.
Well, a pleasure for me, Mark.
And us Gnostic Templars need to stick together, huh?
Yes, I think so. And the Gnostics.
Well, thanks for being on again, and I'll talk to you soon, Andrew. And the rest of you, we'll be back again next week with another show. Hopefully we're going to have a member of another one of the secret societies come on for that show. And until then, have a great week, and always remember that the Holy Grail is right inside of you. Bye for now.